Welcome to Base Talk with Hagen and Hayes. Today's topic is Serge Koussevitzky. Hi, Susan. How are you?
I'm well, David. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you. And you're a Bostonian, so you know everything about Serge Koussevitzky.
Koussevitzky?
Who?
Well, he definitely has a big presence here in Boston. And growing up, I knew him as having been a former conductor of the Boston Symphony Orchestra. I believe it was from like 1924 to 1949. And this was before I played the bass, even. I knew his name because I had gone out to Tanglewood, which is a music festival that basically he created as the Berkshire Music Center originally. And now it's turned into Tanglewood Music Center and Festival. And he has property out there with the house sort of overlooking Tanglewood, where if you're there, you can hear what's being rehearsed or performed on the grounds of Tanglewood, which is incredible.
That's nice.
Yeah, it's a very special spot. It's just the sound waves manage to filter over there. It's beautiful. And then, of course, at Symphony Hall in Boston, he's all over the place, portraits and statues and everything. And then when I started playing the bass, I realized I should have probably learned this in the opposite order. But then I realized he was a bass player and he had written and performed and all that. So really here in Boston, we're super entrenched in Koussevitzky himself.
Yes. Well, I first came across Koussevitzky when I was studying with Bronwyn Nash. Bronwyn had studied with Gary Carr, who inherited Koussevitzky's bass.
Yes.
And Gary used to include music by Koussevitzky in many concerts I heard. And we all played the little Koussevitzky pieces. They were really nice. Andante, Valse Miniature, and the Andante came later. That one wasn't published by IMC. So it's Valse Miniature, Humoresque, and Chanson Triste. And we played them all the time. And they were such lovely pieces. They worked so well on the bass. It's from a different time. It's from a time, it's music that I really love. It's really like salon music, but
right.
Really high-end salon music. It's music that really does, speaks to you as a bass player and speaks to the audience as well. It's a win-win for everybody. And they don't outstay their welcome. They're only about 3 minutes each.
Yeah, they're
and then the Andante
pieces.
Was published by Vorwerk, I think in Germany, maybe in Russia. But it wasn't published by IMC in America, which is why I think none of us knew about it.
Right.
And then my other teacher, František Pošta, who was principal bass of the Czech Philharmonic, recorded it on one of his records. And that was the first time I'd ever heard of this piece. And it's the first one I think Koussevitzky wrote. So it's slightly different to the others. It's a little bit more formulaic, but so romantic and so lyrical. And it's typical bass music. It's in ternary form. Everything in bass music is ternary form.
Yeah, it is.
It's almost like a composer can't think of anything new. So they're A, B, let's repeat A.
Yes.
But it's such lovely music. It's worth playing. And it really shows what the bass can do and how you can really make a lovely sound on the bass. And
it's
what was
true.
What was the first piece you played?
Well, the first piece I played was the set of salon pieces, but no andante. In fact, when I learned them, and there's kind of a neat heritage, a lineage even, was I learned them with my teacher, Ed Barker, who is the principal bass player of the Boston Symphony. He learned them from his teacher, Henry Portnoy, who was principal of the Boston Symphony for many, many years, and overlapped in time with Koussevitzky. Portnoy joined the Boston Symphony in 1943, so that was about six or seven seasons where he was working with Koussevitzky. And the word is that they worked on these pieces together. And so we have, from this lineage, some teeny little details that Koussevitzky is said to have passed on to Portnoy, to Barker, and certainly passed them on to me, I assume to many of his other students, but I would mark them in, you know,
yes,
with little stars and asterisks and things like, Ed Barker does this because Koussevitzky said that that's what he should do type of a thing, which is really fun, like at the end of the Humoresque, taking the last segment up an octave so that it's all harmonics off the end of the fingerboard type thing. But what I thought was interesting is when I learned the salon pieces, Ed said to me, I'd like you to learn the salon pieces. There are three of them. Well, four sort of, but really only three that we play. And I remember he briefly said the name Andante. I never saw it. I never heard it. I learned the set of three and played them sort of as a little unit in like my end of the semester jury. And that was my introduction so that then I could learn the concerto.
Yes.
And this was in college because back then, students didn't learn the Koussevitzky or the Bottesini in high school. We just didn't. So I learned them in college. And what was cool, and I'm sure you know, you have seen this many times over, there are so many little quotes or little stylistic classic Koussevitzky things in those pieces that
Yes.
you see in his concerto, like, little syncopations, notes held over the bar lines, things like that. So I thought it was a very good stepping stone to prepare me for the concerto. And a lot of times I'll do some of those pieces with my students when I feel like they're almost ready for his concerto, but not quite.
Yes.
Now, did you learn the salon pieces first?
I didn't then the concerto. I played only played the concerto once with orchestra, but it was such a big orchestration.
Yes.
It I think I was just standing there and playing, and nobody could hear a thing I was doing. It was really quite strange. But the
Yeah.
one thing that I loved learning about Koussevitzky was the fact that he commissioned so many pieces for orchestra. And really
Yes.
that's his legacy, right? I know as bass players we think it's the
Right.
concerto and four salon pieces, but really it's his legacy of commissioning all these great composers. And in the 1930s, he was fantastic. Many composers had to leave Europe because of the
Yes,
Nazis. And
yes.
they ended up in America, often with no work, no money.
Right.
And he would often commission them.
He was almost
And
like a benefactor for these people.
very much so. And which is the reason we have Bartok's Concerto for Orchestra, because he commissioned that. And he also commissioned the opera Peter Grimes from Benjamin Britten.
Right.
I think that was 1945. And I think the Bartok was earlier than that. But he commissioned, so many of the great composers. The other one I do like, which I tell my students they're always blown away by, is that he commissioned the orchestration of Pictures at an Exhibition by
Yes.
Ravel, Maurice Ravel.
Yes.
So the orchestration that we all play is thanks to Koussevitzky,
Yeah.
a bass
Yeah.
player, which is so nice. And then I found out about the Koussevitzky Foundation, which I think was founded towards the end of the 1940s, I think in memory of his second wife. And it's still going strong now. They commission pieces every year. And it's such an amazing thing. And as a commissioner myself of new music for
Right.
bass, I'm
Wow.
in awe of what he achieved and
Yes.
how the foundation has continued doing such great work.
Yeah, it's amazing. I actually think they were part of the commissioning group that sponsored John Harbison's concerto for
Oh,
bass and orchestra.
right.
But it's interesting because I've played Pictures at an Exhibition and Bartok Concerto for orchestra with the Boston Symphony. And I feel like there's just this sense of pride
Yes.
when the orchestra plays those pieces. It's their music, even though it's everyone's music. But there's just this little bit of it's because of Koussevitzky, who was one of our guys, and there's just always I feel a little extra spark of enthusiasm. Also, they're great pieces, so maybe that has something to do with it.
But when you look at the list of composers that he commissioned and also the foundation commissioned, it's like a who's who of 20th century composers, the first half of the 20th century, and then after he died, the new
Yes.
composers. But it's unbelievable the number of composers. Martinu is one of my favorite composers. And I think he
Yes.
commissioned the first symphony from Martinu. Again, ended up in America with no work. And thanks to Koussevitzky, had a fantastic commission and probably performances with the Boston Symphony.
Yeah. And it's an amazing situation because his family came here from Moscow, and they were a Russian Jewish family. And he could see what was happening in Europe. And I think that he probably, and I don't know this for sure, but I'm just kind of going out on a limb, really felt for the people who were in trouble. Because you look at composers like Schulhoff, who died in a concentration camp, and his music was so incredibly interesting and very, I've played the concertino for viola and the
Yes.
flute slash piccolo and bass, which we call for the rejects of the orchestra. I like to call it for the misunderstood instruments of the orchestra. But you know, I think I always think to myself, I wonder what would have happened if Kuzovsky could have gotten Schulhoff here. And I feel like he just kind of rescued some people. They knew they could come here because America had these open borders and was a welcoming place for people in need. But then they also kind of knew that Kuzovsky was here and might help them get on their feet a little bit with a commission.
But it was
And
amazing when he was in Russia, he started his own publishing company. This was before he came to America. And he published music by Tchaikovsky, Medtner, Scriabin, Rachmaninoff. He really, was an amazing chap. And then I discovered, thanks to Andy Cohen, all the music that was written for Kuzovitsky as a bass player. I didn't know about that. He'd written a fantastic article, he'd done lots of research. And so there are all these different facets to Kuzovitsky. And as bass players, we just think he was a bass player, a great bass player who wrote these five pieces. But really, there's so many other facets to this man. He really was a great man, really with a great life.
really and truly. And you're right, his second wife Natalie is the one that helped the Kuzovsky Music Foundation. He created it in her honor. Did you know that he also was responsible for Gershwin's Second Rhapsody?
Yes, I did. I read that.
Isn't
Yes.
that cool?
Isn't it? Isn't
You
it?
know, because he was American, you know, but so popular, so talented. It's just when you look at the scope of the people, Howard Hanson, Hindemith, Stravinsky Symphony of Psalms,
I know. Isn't that fantastic?
so much music that he was. I kind of feel like I know they wrote it, but I feel like he was responsible for it in a certain extent. And then, of course, the story of his bass and Gary Carr, which Gary told us about in last season, just an amazing situation. And you know, one of the things about Tanglewood and this home that he had there called Saranac, and it kind of makes me think of the bass, his presence was very powerful. And on his passing, so many people have felt that they have seen his ghost or his spirit. And, you know, I don't know, not everyone believes in that sort of thing. It doesn't matter. But they say, the legend has it, that Saranac, his sort of, they called it a mansion. I mean, it's definitely a big, stately house.
Yes.
They say you can see his ghost there sometimes. And
Really.
a few years ago, when we were just coming out of the COVID lockdown stuff here in Boston, the Boston Pops had their 4th of July, you know, Independence Day concert out at Tanglewood instead of in Boston because they knew that they could kind of limit how many people could come. Whereas in Boston, there's no doors, there's no gates, there's no way to stop
Yes.
it if there's too many people, and there was still kind of crowd control happening here. So we went out to Tanglewood, and I drove up to Saranac, and it's because it's just so close. And I took some pictures. It wasn't open, but I took some pictures through the window. And I'll tell you, there were some very interesting reflections of light
Really?
in the windows. I don't know. I don't know. I think you have to believe in ghosts or spirits, but there was definitely, it was a cloudy day, so there was no sun.
Yes.
But it wasn't, you know, it wasn't nighttime, it was daytime. But there was some very strange reflections going on with the windows. I'll have to show you when you come to
Really?
Boston. Yes. And it was just interesting. And I thought, haunted, not haunted, I don't know. But there's definitely, you can definitely feel the importance, musical importance, when you're just out there. And he and his wife are both buried in a church, in Lenox, which is Tanglewood sort of took, I believe, my understanding is it took kind of, pro like Washington, D.C., took property from different towns.
Yes.
And Lenox is one of the towns. And he's buried on the top of a hill at a church called the Church on the Hill,
Right.
with his wife. And it's very cool because it's just, Kuzovsky is everywhere out there.
Well, I'd never heard of Saranac until you and I were talking. So I did some research and found photographs and some videos and information. It looks really fantastic. And when I wrote my piece, Silences and Shadows, for the Kuzovitsky Connections series, I imagined just walking through the house, and you feel the presence of somebody. It's just almost as though Kuzovitsky has just walked out of the room and he's in the next room, and then you walk into the next room and he's just moved on. The idea is the presence is always there. It's just like walking through the room. That was the idea behind the piece, and
That
it's just
piece, it does that very well, I think.
I enjoyed writing it. And I used the first, I can't remember what the notes were. I used three harmonics, or was it an
There's
E
an
and a G,
A,
a D
dun,
sharp,
yeah.
which all I took from Koussevitzky's name. So I used that all the way through. But I just imagine just walking through very slowly this mansion, because I think all his clothes are still there, aren't they? And
They are. You
the
can see his
furniture is still there.
room. Yep, you can see the room where he would, put on his concert attire, and they have some of it there.
Wow.
And it's so stylish of the time.
Yes.
He always had the greatest clothes. He was not a poor man, so he could afford these things. And I'm sure you know this story, but when he came to Boston and he was conducting the orchestra, people didn't all know what he had been doing before. And so they didn't know that he was, in Europe, a famous double bass soloist. Like,
Yes.
what even is that, right? And after a while, there was a little bit of grumbling from the orchestra. And what does he even play? Who is he? What's he? Why is he telling us what to do? Blah, blah, all that. So he gave a recital at Symphony Hall. And the stories that Ed told me was Serge came out on stage in a top hat with a velvet cape and gloves on his hands, and he had his valet carrying the bass. And then he went to center stage and took off the accoutrements that he didn't need to be wearing, the hat, the cape, the gloves, and sort of did a swaparoo with his valet, I'll take the bass, you take the clothes type of a thing.
Yes.
And I thought, what drama. And that's the opening of his concerto, right? There's
Yes.
this big fanfare, and then look at me, I am here. To me, that opening statement in the concerto, the cadenza, is like that. And I just always think that must have been his personality,
I'm expecting this when I come to Boston. So I'm expecting a valet to bring my bass onto the stage, if that's
As long
okay.
as you have the top hat.
I certainly will.
It's just very fascinating to me. I kind of wish that it had been put on video, which I know wasn't possible, but and you have to I have to believe the stories. It's legendary, and it
Well,
may be
my teacher
enhanced, but
recorded the Kuzovitsky Concerto, Franz Poster, and the I think it was just before I met him, and the record came out just I think a little bit later. And then during lockdown, suddenly somebody found a video of him playing it with the orchestra, and so again that must have been done round about the time. And he was an old-fashioned player. And it just fitted the style of the Kuzovitsky concerto so well. And it was almost like Kuzovitsky playing his concerto, I'm sure. It was just glorious playing. It's a great piece. It's a great concerto. It really suits the bass well.
It
It's
does.
a really amazing piece, which when you look at, when you study more of these pieces, you realize he must have been such a great player. And certainly with the Glier pieces. But the Kuzovitsky concerto has got so many different facets to it, which I like. And as
It
a
does.
player and a teacher, I like. It's a nice teaching piece.
It is. It's a great teaching
Far more than
piece.
just talking about the notes.
It's so musical and of the time, but in a nice romantic time period style. And I still think it holds up today beautifully. I think it's fun, and I love teaching it. And I love that because he was a bass player, he knew recycle a little bit of stuff, like the
Yes.
first and third movements having that big chunk of overlapping material.
Yes.
When I teach that to a student, it is a sense of relief. Every student says, "Oh, thank God I already know part of it." And it doesn't matter if I'm teaching it, right now I'm teaching it to a 13-year-old student, or if I'm teaching it to a college student, there's always that little sense of relief of, wow, here's a whole bunch of it that at least I know the notes and the fingerings and bowings. I may want to phrase it differently because now we're in a new movement, but I know all of the foundation.
It's these pieces are really nice, and they've stood the test of time. And even though the little pieces in a salon style, it sort of doesn't matter because they still work, and they still test your musical skills, but also your technical skills as well. And they, as I said before, they don't outstay their welcome. Everybody wins.
And you know, I've done several sacrilegious things I probably shouldn't even share, but I'm going to.
Going to have.
There was a time when I played Bottesini's Second Concerto with an orchestra, and at that time I was a loss for what would be a good encore. This was years ago. I didn't have all the short solo pieces that I have now. So I thought, why don't I do two of the salon pieces? I have string orchestra accompaniments, so I gave
Yes.
them to the orchestra. And what I did was I did the Chanson Triste because it's just so soulful. But you don't want to end that as an encore, it's a little depressing. And so what I did was, you know, the very end of it, I created just a few notes. And then when it ends, I just go dum bum. Yeah, da, 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 da. And I went into the waltz.
You're such a
And
composer.
oh yeah, two notes really. But it was the orchestra had fun doing it and the audience loved it, and it was almost too long to be an encore, but not too long to be an encore, but it was definitely a hefty sized encore. But people really liked it. The other sacrilegious thing that I've done with his
There's
music.
more.
I could go to like bass player jail, I think. But at the I did this at the ISB convention in 2015, and with my boss at Berkeley, Steve Bailey, who is a fretless six-string electric bass player,
Yes.
the first one really. And he was doing this recital at the convention of bass duet type
Yes.
things. And he was playing with Rufus Reed, and you name it, he was playing with all sorts of people. And he
Yes.
said to me, I'd love to do one of the Koussevitzky pieces. So we took the chanson, I know you've heard it, and he took the piano part. I thought he meant like have a pianist and we sort of trade the melody, but he created the most interesting accompaniment on electric bass. And by interesting, I don't mean like, oh, that's interesting. It really. It's all the same chords,
Yes.
but he makes it kind of more modern. And he looked at me one day and he said, "Do you think Koussevitzky is going to come back from the dead and kill us for this?" And I said, "No, I don't." He loved new music so much. He commissioned so much. I don't think that he would be against modernizing one of his pieces in a way that makes now people who play more than just the double bass interested in his music. And so we played it at Berkeley a couple of times. He put it on an album of his with all duos. I mean, I'm on an album with Bela Fleck and Willie Nelson and Victor Wooten and a million really like super famous people. And
I'm moving in the
then
right circles here, then.
yeah, right? I was like, wow, one of these things is not like the other. That would be me. But it's really, really interesting, and I'll tell you, it's gone over really well anytime we've performed it. We were a little nervous at the convention, thinking there's a lot of classical players that are going to be at his recital. What are they
Yes.
going to think? But people loved it, and it's fun. And there's this part where it's, you know, it switches to the poco piumoso, the da 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 da, and it sounds like funky rock and roll when he does the electric bass. It's like dum dum. It's really neat, like this rolled chord that he does, and I just think
Need to hear
that's
this.
it sounds cool. Well,
That's
if
fantastic.
all goes according to plan, he
Yes.
will be playing it
That
in
is
Boston when
fantastic.
you're here. But you know, I think of these two very sacrilegious moments that I've had with Koussevitzky's music, and I like to think that he wouldn't mind because he was, it's keeping his music played maybe in a slightly different way, hopefully a little bit relevant to today. But definitely he liked commissioning new music. I don't think, I hope he wouldn't be offended if somebody did something different to his music.
I'm sure he never thought twice about his music because probably in his mind, he was a conductor first who commissioned music. And this was just something he did when he was younger. So I'm sure that the music wasn't that important to him, really. It probably was at the time when he wrote it and played it. but I'm sure it was just something from his past.
Yeah.
Present was far more important than the past to
That's
him.
a really good way to look at it.
I think he'd be really happy. Wouldn't it be nice to know what these people think? All the composers long dead that were still playing their music, and how popular some of them still are. And it'd be so nice to meet them, just to say, did you realize this is going to outlive you by, 50 years, 100 years, 200 years?
It's true. Yeah, to know that people's names are still relevant many years later. I'm sure some people expect it, and I'm sure many people are pleasantly surprised.
I talk to my students a lot when they're learning Koussevitzky, about his life as a soloist and writing these pieces, but then more importantly, his life as a conductor and also commissioning so many of these pieces, and how we're connected, really, however loosely, as bass players, to so many of these great pieces still in the repertoire today.
It's amazing. Anytime the Boston Symphony plays one of the pieces that he was responsible for commissioning, I send out a very annoying, I'm sure, email blast to my students saying, like, Koussevitzky was a bass player, he was a conductor, he commissioned this piece, it's being played right down the street from you. There's no reason not to come hear this.
Exactly. That's nice though. And it's nice that we keep his legacy alive. And I enjoyed commissioning all the new pieces for Koussevitzky Connections night. And it was a very open commission. I just said something inspired in some way by Koussevitzky. So it was really interesting what people came up with. It was nice. I think we got about 14 or 15 pieces,
Yeah,
which
there's
is
a lot of
nice.
them. And I think we're going to have to talk about those very soon.
Yes, exactly. It's been interesting talking about Koussevitzky, a person I really revere.
Yeah, me too. I always felt an extra special connection here in Boston to him too, knowing that he was, if he were on the Red Sox, the Boston Red Sox would say he's one of our guys. He's connected to the Boston Symphony. He's one of our guys.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Well, this is a great talk. We should talk more about this.
I think we can.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to season two of Bass Talk with Hagen and Hayes. Like and subscribe. Thank you to our sponsors, Leatherwood Rosin, whose rosin I have been using so much exclusively, actually, for the past couple months in all of my playing, solo playing, and orchestral playing, and to Grace Gallery Designs. And we look forward to talking to everybody in our next episode. Bye
Thank
bye.
you for listening.